Welcome to the Obesity Panacea podcast. Today, instead of being a chat between Peter and I, I'm actually chatting with one of my sibling or science blogs peers, and it's Jason Goldman from The Thoughtful Animal. So welcome, Jason.
Thank you.
So why don't you just briefly introduce yourself to the listeners?
All right. So like you said, my name is Jason Goldman. I'm a graduate student. Just finished my third year in developmental psychology. My research, I actually have two lines of research. One of them sort of parallels one of the things that I read about on my blog, which is animal cognition, animal behavior. But the other one, which I don't really write about as much, I do brain imaging research of reading and dyslexia.
Oh, okay. I didn't know that. That's cool. So is that like MRI stuff, like functional MRI, or what's that?
The work that I'm doing is actually structural.
But there are
people doing that work.
Oh, cool. Okay. So today we're going to be talking about self-report research in general. I guess, Jason, you being the psychologist, you're the one that came up with this idea and said that, self-report is the basis for a lot of, or I think the foundation is the word you use for psychology. So why don't you kind of sell me on self-report here?
Yeah, well, I don't know that I would use the word foundation necessarily, but it certainly, for some areas of psychology, certainly is the bread and butter. Because anytime I think you're interested in sort of the way people think and how their minds work and what they remember, in motivations and drives and desires and goals, there are certainly ways you can measure those things which don't rely, on self-report or on directly asking an experiment participant. There are certain things you can learn from imaging or from different physiological measures. But at the end of the day, you can put someone in an fMRI, and that can tell you some interesting things, but what I can't tell you is, how many books they read last year or what they remember from when they were 14 years old about whatever subject you're interested in. So I think self-report is a really important tool. We just have to know how to use it, right?
Well, I think when you said, I can't tell you how many books someone read last year, I'm not sure if someone writes down the number of books they read last year that I would believe them. And this is where, I definitely believe that self-report has its place, for sure, but I think it's important to use it, sort of like you said, when you want to know how someone thinks and feels, then I think self-report is absolutely excellent. But when you want to know about a behavior, and this is where, in the stuff that I tend to do when it comes to physical activity, when it comes to reporting, someone's body weight or how much TV time they get, then I get very nervous about using self-report because it's often not even close to being as accurate as just measuring those behaviors. And that's where I get kind of skeptical sometimes about self-report studies, or not skeptical, but take it with a grain of salt, I guess.
Yeah, I mean, and I think sort of a responsible researcher should also take those kinds of measurements with a grain of salt. And I think someone who's relying on self-report should know, what the dangers are, and as much as possible, try to account for them in the design of the measure, whatever kind of, measure it is or questionnaire. But even if someone, let's say I asked you how many books you read last year, and, maybe you just estimated because you don't actually remember specifically how many books you read last year, that's also something that's interesting to know. The way that people's, let's say, estimates of things sort of break down in certain situations.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think, and because Peter's talked about a few studies like this on our site, when you ask people, do you think you're normal weight or overweight? And people who are in a classroom with heavier peers tend to think that they're normal weight, even if they're overweight or obese, compared to people who are in a skinnier class. So it's very interesting to know sort of someone's perception of something, even if it's not, as accurate as actually measuring it. But I think that it's, and I think this is probably a fairly going to be a boring debate because it sounds like we agree that the self-report has a place, but it's worth knowing the limitations. And I think that's when I get frustrated. Like the paper that kind of led to this conversation, the paper you sent me from Science Daily that was kind of saying that people are eating out less than we thought. And then when I went to the actual thesis, and it sounded like actually the person just asked people how much to eat out, and they said, oh, not so much. And then Science Daily was promoting this as a, you know, an exciting new finding that people aren't eating out as much. And I was thinking, well, maybe, or maybe it's just a socially desirable thing to say you eat at home most of the time with your family.
Right. I mean, I think there's also different kinds of self-report. Asking someone an open-ended question, like, you know, how often do you eat out or something,
yeah,
will give you one kind of answer. But give, you know, sort of setting it up in sort of a multiple choice kind of a sense, I think will result in a different set of answers. Like, you know, if I asked you what you did today, you know, name all the things that you've done today since you woke up, you probably wouldn't mention, you know, taking a shower because it's just kind of your everyday routine and you probably, you know, you wouldn't think of mentioning that to me.
Right.
But if I gave you a checklist of items, and one of his items was take a shower, you would certainly check it off.
Right, and then so the review paper that we wanted to discuss by Norbert Schwartz, it's interesting, though, that he mentions that you'll check it off if it's on the sheet, but then that also kind of limits the answers to making right. It very unlikely that you're going to mention something that's not in the list of appropriate answers.
Right, so but then that's where it's important to sort of make sure that your measurements are sort of guided by theory instead of just making up questions that you think might be interesting to ask.
When I found, because one of the first things he says is that it's important that people understand both the literal and pragmatic meaning of the question. So, you know, that they understand the words, but then also that they understand sort of the context of the question and whether or not you want to know things like, you know, should I include that I took a shower today, that I walked 20 steps from the bathroom, that kind of thing. But it's interesting because a conference I was at a few weeks ago, they were talking about physical activity levels over the past 40, 50, 60 years. And the theme seemed to be coming out that it's almost impossible to know because not only is it difficult to compare Finnish data with American data with French data because they're translated slightly differently, but even in a culture over time, the meaning of physical activity differs, the social value of physical activity differs, and so it becomes pretty much impossible to actually compare any of these studies and get any really valuable data out of it.
Yeah, I think cross-cultural stuff is especially, it's tough. But I think it also makes people, you know, sort of get creative with the way that, you know, maybe the way that they measure things. So, like, one of the measures that I use in my research, in my reading research,
yeah.
You know, I could ask, you know, someone how many books they read last year or last month or whatever. And one of the things I'm interested in is the way that reading experience and brain development interact. So I do want to try to figure out a way to measure how much reading experience someone has.
Okay. Yeah.
So what a few researchers about 15 years ago did was instead of just asking someone that question, they came up with a list of popular titles, book titles, or author names.
Oh, okay.
Give you a gigantic checklist, and your job, and there's you know, genuine items and like distractor or fake items.
Yeah.
And your job is to check off as many as possible that you know are real.
Okay, that makes sense.
So
it's kind of a proxy.
It's not directly getting at the issue of how many books you read last year.
Right.
But across the sample, it'll sort of get at your relative amount of reading experience.
Right. No, that's smart. That makes sense. And I guess, and I always come at it from my perspective of, I mean, we're trying to measure physical activity most of the time, and it's really difficult, obviously. And it's now I'm moving into measuring sedentary time. And of course, I mean, it's one thing to remember if you worked out this morning. It's another thing entirely to remember how many minutes you spent sitting. I mean, it's pretty much impossible. And so this is where, you know, we're trying to get into more of the direct measurement of things. Because for what we want to do for the physiology of it, you know, it's interesting, the perception versus the reality, but we really want to know exactly how much time people spend in these given behaviors rather than, you know, what they think they spend in those behaviors.
Right. I mean, and these kinds of self-report measures might, you know, they might not be the right tool for that. Or or maybe, you know, they're the right tool, but you have to use sort of an indirect, you have to ask it in an indirect way, because we also know that people, sort of, while they're filling out a questionnaire, let's say, they're sort of engaged in a conversation of sorts with the experimenter.
Right, right, yeah.
You know, like in that paper we were talking about, the Schwartz paper, if someone got one questionnaire, but at the top of the letterhead it said, you know, Institute for Personality Research, they would answer the same set of questions differently than if a letterhead said Institute for Social Cognition or something.
Yes.
So I think what it forces the researcher to do is get creative, and I don't think measuring things indirectly, I think sometimes you want to measure things indirectly, so you're not priming a participant to think about something in a certain way or in a certain context.
Right.
And I think that can be done, and the results can be really interesting when done right.
When I found it really interesting when he mentioned that even if you give a 10-point scale, if it goes from 0 to 10 versus going from -5 to +5, it can give you completely different answers, which is, it makes sense. Like, I can see myself giving a different answer on that, but it's funny when you think about it, because you think, you know, it's the same thing.
And cross-culturally, there are certain, you know, cultures or certain groups of people who will, you know, sort of categorically avoid the extremes of a continuum. And so if you give them a scale that's like 1 to 10, what they really see on some level is like 2 to 9.
Right. When I remember hearing at some point that if you tell someone to guess and like a random number between 0 and 10, that, you know, 60% of people will guess 7 or something, for the same reason that it's like, it's not, you know, not in the extreme. It seems kind of like a safe place to be.
Yeah. So I mean, personally, I think sort of the science of the way self-report is actually really interesting, but I think that we know a lot, but at this point, we know a lot about how it works, and so there should be no reason for a given self-report measure that, you know, if you want to investigate something, shouldn't be sort of done with all of those things in mind, or done the right way.
Right, now that makes sense, and I'm wondering now, that was an interesting example you gave about the books. I'm wondering if a way to measure TV time would be something like to ask people, you know, about specific episodes of Seinfeld or something, you know, to check off things that they knew had happened or something, to do something similar to get at who's watched the most TV versus who's watched the least amount of TV, you know what I mean? See their knowledge. That's interesting.
Yeah, it doesn't tell you, you know, that they watched 13 hours of TV last week or yesterday or whatever, but it'll sort of give you a relative sense of within the population, within the sample, you know, where they fall.
Okay, that's very cool. That's interesting. And was there anything else from the paper that you thought was really cool that you wanted to bring up?
Not exactly. And I think we're probably about to hit our software time limit.
I think we're coming up to it. Yeah. So all right. Well, why don't we call it a day for the first ever Science Blog co-blog podcast. Yeah, all right. Well, thanks a lot, Jason. I really enjoyed this.
Thank you.
All right, and I'll talk to you soon.
Yeah.
Okay, bye.